What'd you think today so far?
Oh, I think it's
wonderful.
Really wonderful. Yeah.
Favorite part?
Great people. Great. Good fun. I'm two different podcasts and
completely different things.
Completely different things,
right?
Different things and both entertaining and challenging it's really fun. It's like it's nice to have a topic and a theme and something you can
actually
sink your teeth into. Yeah.
Well, we'll make sure to break it out of the comfortability by having no topic or theme for the last bit.
Great.
Mostly, this is just wanting to thank, and the other ones for our other two shows we did, they have their own themes and formats, but since we have you here, we wanted to just talk a little bit to you.
Great.
So, our listeners out there, this is kind of a special one-off type thing for Universe Head, so we won't do it every week or month or maybe ever again, but if we have another wonderful guest or Mr. Kazarinski comes back, we'll absolutely do it again. Yeah. So, Tim, first, I just wanted to ask, what are you doing?
What am I doing? I am enjoying myself. I'm 67 years old.
That's the new 45.
Huh?
67 is the new 45.
67 is the new 45. Yeah. And I've been married to the same wonderful woman for 34 years. My kids have grown and they're wonderful. It's kind of Miller time for me. And I'm really sort of at the point in my life where I've done a bunch of stuff that I never dreamed that I would get to do. I remember Denise, my partner, used to say that in Russia, when people couldn't afford to go to the Moscow Circus, mm-hmm. And the shtetls and the poor, that everybody in town would, in the village would like throw in a few kopecks or whatever to send one person to the Moscow Circus and then have that person come back and tell
what the story.
The experience was like. And I, from my life, my career, I feel like I was that guy who was sent into, you know,
the traveling storyteller. You get to go back
and
tell
got,
all of that.
And I got to experience all this really incredible and cool stuff and come back to, you know, Chicago I loved. And so I get to come home to my shtetl, which is Chicago, and just recount the adventures that I had.
Well, I mean, that's what everybody wants to do, right? They just want those things and to be able to say that they did the things they love.
And so that's what, and I love Chicago. I love living here. And I'm lucky. I feel grateful to have raised my kids here. And I don't want to go anywhere.
Anyway.
I don't want to go to Florida. I don't want to be a snowbird. And I like it here. And I'm enjoying stuff. And now I'm doing stuff that I've never done before. I did. My wife got me to do a musical, and then that led to me touring for a year and a half as The Wizard of Oz in Wicked, and as the Wizard of Oz, who the hell? I never dreamed that would happen. And that happened when I was 65 years old. I'm going woohoo! And then the guy who directed it, Joe Mantello, then hired me to do his next Broadway show, which was An Act of God with Jim Parsons. And I'd already got my Medicare card, and then a few months later, I'm making my Broadway debut. I'm going, wow, only that's in America amazing. Does this crap happen, no?
So let's break it down. So from 0 to 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 60, greatest things for you. And just no children or marriages.
Ah, all right. Zero to 20.
0 to 20.
My first 16 years in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Then sort of quitting school, running off to America, living with my crazy Polish aunts in Pennsylvania.
Well, that's incredible in itself.
It was wild. I had an ulcer at 14, and a doctor said, get out. And it was a very smart doctor, and I went, okay, I'll get out, you know.
You've had some really good medical advice in your life.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They have universal health. You know, they have, you know, universal medicine.
Yeah.
What we should have, you know, Medicare for all. Come on.
Absolutely.
The richest place, the richest country on earth. You know, I think Botswana has, you know, universal medical care. Why can't America? So anyway, that was really exciting to come to America. And then I ended up getting edited the high school newspaper in Johnstown. I got to be, you know, which got me a job at the local newspaper. And then there was a wildcat strike one night, and I ended up getting hired as a reporter at 17. And then I was like, here we go. Only in America, yeah. And then I came to Chicago at age 18 in 1968. What better time to be?
Where did you know anybody?
Yeah, my sister and brother-in-law were working their way around the world, and they were here for a while, and so they said, come stay with us. And I said, you know what? No, I said, you're crazy. I said, I've got a great job here, and I'm a reporter, and my brother-in-law was running a restaurant here called the Pickle Barrel, and he said, what are they paying you at that newspaper? I said, proudly, I said, $65 a week. And he said, yeah, I'll give you $100 to clean tables. Going, damn it. So I came here and the best thing I ever did, 1968, I came here and worked at the Pickle Barrel and had a ball and ended up finishing, you know, college. And
that should be one of the quotes on the buses. Do you see those quotes on the buses that go by? Like, Chicago will be the last greatest city left on earth.
Yeah. It is the best.
The greatest thing I ever did was move to Chicago.
Yeah.
Tim Kazurinsky.
Yeah. And I never left. I'm the schmuck who stayed. Chicago been very, very good to me.
All right, 20 to 40.
I was in the 20s. I was in the ad business until I was almost 28, and then loved it. Worked for Leo Burnett and McCann Erickson. Had a great time, and I didn't hate the ad. I loved the ad business, but I was nervous presenting my commercials. So somebody said, take a Dale Carnegie class or a class at Second City. Yeah. So I took a class at Second City, and then I took another class, and they offered me a job. And so I was like, that's crazy. So I took an 80% pay cut to go work at Second City. And
the best decision.
Best decision ever. So, because a couple of years later, I got hired on Saturday Night Live. And, you know, weirdly, I didn't audition for Second City. I didn't have to audition for Saturday Night Live. John Belushi, that guy there on the magnet on that file cabinet, said to the producer, Dick Ebersol, you should go look at this guy. And Ebersol came in and watched the show. So I guess I did audition, but I didn't
even
have
know
to.
It.
You know, if I'd had to audition, I'd been horrible. I auditioned terribly. So. But he saw me on stage at Second City, and he hired me for SNL. Yeah, so.
That's amazing.
But those two, I got to say, career-wise, in the span of 60 years, my 2 years at Second City, the best 2 years of my life.
Really?
Yeah. Creatively. Loved it. Even more than the four at SNL. Second City was, because at that point, you know, you put in touch with your own creativity, and you're generating stuff every night. You're improvising, taking audience suggestions. It's such a roller coaster ride. It's wonderful. It's SNL. You're doing, you know, you're writing material, you're creating, you're doing scenes. But that instant genesis, where you generate ideas, nothing was as great or as much fun as doing my 2 years at Second City with, you know, Danny Breen, God rest his soul. Bruce Jarko, Nancy Kelly, Mary Gross, Jim Belushi. It was
just an amazing,
wonderful time.
And that type of work too is different. Like I noticed of the cast members when you were on SNL, only three of the actual cast were also credited as writers. Was that different for the writers / actors performers cast? Did you have extra stuff you had to do, and were the other guys just partying while you were having to write their sketches?
Oh yeah, no. But here's the thing: I got a paycheck as a writer.
Oh.
Yeah. So weirdly, I have the distinction of saying that at Saturday Night Live, I was making more money than Eddie Murphy, which is not at all fair. He has since made up for that gap.
Yeah.
No, 1,000-fold probably. But he was a great guy, a wonderful guy, and was very generous and very sharp. And he would very often say, I'm too heavy in the show. Let's give some of my stuff to some other people. He was...
I'm sure Piscopo liked that.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah. Who's... Joe is now a conservative radio host in Jersey. Yeah. He was going to run for a governor, I think, or the Senate.
Yeah. God, Lord.
Go figure.
Go for it, Joe. Go for it. You just don't win.
Yeah.
So we did 10, 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 60?
40 to 60. It was I got to come home, Chicago. Mm-hmm. We won't deal with how wonderful marriage and kids is. It won't dwell on that, but that was... I had been pretty much working real hard most of my life, and so it was nice to come home and, you know, slow down. And, you know, my agents all said, you got to go to New York, you got to go to L.A., and I went, nah, I don't. Nah, I can write, I can mail stuff. And as a screenwriter, that was the, you know, the mellow time for me, 40 to 60, writing. Started on My Bodyguard, and then Sexual Perversity in Chicago, which became the movie about last night. And we worked on Three Men and a Little Lady. We did a Black Cowboy movie. We were getting pegged as Brat Pack writers, so we did a Black Cowboy movie called The Cherokee Kid. So,
The Cherokee Kid with Sinbad?
Yeah, yeah.
I loved The Cherokee Kid.
The Cherokee Kid. And that's all real stuff. All of the incidents in that film are real stories about black outlaws and black lawmen. Oh. All those characters, every character in that movie is a real character from history.
I have to go back and watch The Cherokee
Kid.
Yeah,
it's all, yeah. Even A. Martinez plays a character called Juan Nepomuceno Cortina, who is the only man to ever invade the United States. He held Brownsville, Texas for a couple of weeks.
And was like, nah, yeah. I don't want it.
And he was a very florid speaker, too, and a very loquacious man, if you ever read any of
Long,
his writings.
Beautiful, luscious words.
Yeah, and he did a terrific job. So that was sort of my screenwriting, portion. I have 20 years as a screenwriter, and I loved that because I got to live here. And my writing partner, Denise DeClue, we had a wonderful 20-year run. And Denise lives in Penang, Malaysia.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Penang curry.
Yeah, Penang curry is great. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So
have you tried the Masaman curry?
Masaman, yes.
I love the Masaman
too.
Good
Lord. Yeah. Just put them all together.
Yeah.
Put it over rice.
Yeah.
Add chicken.
Yeah. I love the curries. Yeah.
Stefan.
I hitchhiked around in 1969. I hitchhiked around Europe for a summer. And I pretty much ate when I was in London for about 2 months there, running breakfasts at the Tipperary house, which was a ramshackle hotel, a 7-story building with no elevator, and I ran continental breakfast for free rent. So, but I loved London in 1969.
Oh my God!
But I pretty much ate Indian and Pakistani food just the whole time. I went nuts for curry. Yeah.
So I only left out in the set of family stuff so that we could actually just focus on it more. So, could you tell us a little bit? We know you met your wife right at the last year that you were at Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Been married for 34 years, you said. Where did she come with you from New York, wherever you went? You guys moved back to Chicago here. I know you have some kids, too.
Yeah, she had done five Broadway shows, and she made her Broadway debut 42 years before me. So
what?
As an ingenue, and she toured the country with No No Nanette, and did Good News, and she did, and she met so many people that she worked with that were that this generation wouldn't know about, June Allison, Virginia Mayo, Rochester from the Jack Benny Show, John Payne, Dennis Day, all of these great people I used to watch in movies from the 40s and 50s. She worked with all those great people, Lola Falana, and then she did Chorus Line for 4 years.
I think we need to have another guest.
Yeah, she sang, her big number was Everything is Beautiful at the Ballet. She's a great singer, dancer.
We will set it up. She can come and perform for us as a special guest star.
Yeah, she's at rehearsal now. Now she's doing legit stuff. She's like working with Shaw Chicago.
No more Broadway.
As we speak, she's at rehearsal for Chicago Shakespeare Project.
Is she really?
And Peter Guarino does this wonderful series of, he takes Shakespeare plays and does stage readings at libraries around the city. So the Newbury Library and Highland Park and Niles and
Look for that.
Yeah, yeah.
All of our listeners, yeah, look for this.
And so she's in rehearsal right now for Coriolanus.
Ooh.
I thought it was Coriolanus, but it's Coriolanus.
Coriolanus. Yes. You also have, I know, one daughter.
Yep.
You said in
New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Yeah, she's been there 3.5 years now.
What? How? Tell us about your daughter.
Zoe, would love to. she did an exchange to Germany. So she loved to travel.
Mm-hmm.
So she did an exchange for German class. We had a German student come with us, and then Zoe went to Germany. But then I'm from Australia. She arranged by herself to do study abroad and went to Australia and fell in love with it. And she lived with the Blackmans, the family, and they were great because they made her make dinner one night a week, and they dragged her. They were spelunkers. They dragged her to see caves and stuff. She was like, I'm done with the caves. But they're lovely, lovely people. And
thank you, Blackmans.
So she fell in love with Australia and actually ended up doing a semester of college there, and she went 5 times, and then she used up her 2-year, a 1-year work visa there. And when she couldn't get back in, she got a work visa to New Zealand, figuring she'd fly over,
yeah,
to visit her friends in Sydney. But while she was there, she fell in love with New Zealand, and she's been living and working there for 3.5 years. Yeah, and now she in Christchurch and now Wellington. Yeah,
that's amazing. Well, if your daughter listens, I hope you're having a wonderful time. Your parents miss you, but they're also happy for you.
Yeah, no, she's making her own way, and you know, I ran away home from home at 16. So how am I going to tell
Australia.
Her she from Australia? How am I going to tell her she can't do that?
Don't do it. Other children?
Yeah, Pete.
Pete?
Yeah, Pete's doing great. He's he lives 5 blocks from us.
That's amazing.
Up in Evanston.
And I'm sure my mother would love for me to live 5 blocks from her.
Yeah. So he's too close. She's too far away.
Yeah.
So
we in the middle. We've done some family, some professional. I would like to, just because I think every single person, and it's all anybody talks about, what's going on with politics?
Oh.
You just, if you vent, yell, whatever you want to do, what the fuck is going on?
This experiment, known as
the grand
United
experiment.
States, I have the perspective of having grown up 16 years in Australia and landing in the United States in March of 1966. The changes that I have seen in the United States from that point on, this was an extremely racist nation when I arrived. In Johnstown at that time, Black kids couldn't swim in the swimming pool.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, what? And it was there were, the South was still
Southern.
Still, I mean,
yeah.
Let's not even go to talk about Alabama. musicians, artists, there were places people couldn't eat, couldn't go. It's a remarkable change when it came to when Obama appeared on the market, I never conceived that an African-American would be in the White House in my lifetime,
yeah,
from my initial perceptions of the United States. So that after 2 terms of George Bush, that America could put a black man in the White House, it was like, that is what makes America great. I mean, how did this happen?
Yeah.
I was like, it's inconceivable to me, and it's just magical, and that this same country, after 2 years, of, 2 terms of Obama, can turn around and put this bombastic orange asshole in the White House. How this is the perfect storm of how did this freaking happen? And we have a dangerous moron in the White House.
No, didn't you hear he's a stable genius?
Oh, stable genius. Yeah. That's. Usually stable geniuses are shoveling horse shit.
That's what I was doing.
No, this is, it's frightening to me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, when's it going to stop? When, you know, it's a, I'm kind of been in limbo of like in denial of like what,
yes,
but it's truly frightening. And, I wonder how far this absurdity goes. You know, Stephen Colbert is keeping me sane. That's the only show we tape and watch every night. It's a,
and I'm kind of, he is just the worst. But also part of me as a voyeur and loving to watch shit burn, it is, I never followed politics so closely.
Yeah.
I literally, I don't tweet except to what the hell did he just say today?
Yeah.
So it, are you enjoying any of the, just the entertainment?
The madness?
The madness.
I think I'm a little too old to, it's not so amusing to me anymore. It's frightening, and I just can't wait for it to be over.
Yeah,
that's all. But
Trump, if you're listening, stop it, you're scaring us.
Yeah, exactly. It has spawned and triggered a level of activism that I have certainly not seen since the Vietnam War. That people, however this perfect storm happened, that this guy got in, I think that's going to be rectified in the future. But that can't come soon enough.
The new Star Wars, in that theme, with the new Star Wars, I've liked to use the analogy that, I mean, we really could not have gotten, we may have thought Obama was Luke Skywalker, but no, we had to have Darth Vader before we get Luke Skywalker. So this is our Darth Vader.
Yeah.
We have to, then the Rebel Alliance comes together, and after this, we'll just, it's easy.
Yeah.
It's just from here on out, someone's going to be great.
Yeah, yeah. And I certainly think that that young people have been awakened. They're much more woke than they used to be. And I think the election, the Moore election in Alabama, was a template for what hopefully will be the future to come. Where
it's going to be interesting and controversial, and I hope that I can avoid it all. I'm going to watch some nice cartoons and just put my head down and wait till it gets better. I do want to say
that the after the election, the episode of Saturday Night Live where Kate McKinnon came out as Hillary Clinton and sang Hallelujah, and Leonard Cohen had just died.
Yes.
And so for her to be singing Hallelujah, I thought it was an inspired moment. And then to have Dave Chappelle do the his intro was pretty amazing.
It was.
I thought it was a pretty remarkable show. Made me very proud to have been a member of the SNL family.
He had a great message, and actually, he just released a new Netflix special where he addresses that his closing statements toward Trump.
Oh, great!
Yes.
Oh, I haven't. Is it running right now?
It's right now. It's on Netflix.
All right. Oh, good.
It's on Netflix. I won't ruin it for you, but he discusses what he wished he had said.
Oh, that's great. no, he's pretty remarkable.
Tim, is there anywhere anybody, if anyone wanted to come see you in Chicago, we could come see you do something?
Yeah, you know what? I have been doing more stage work, and I love doing theater here in town. And George Wendt and I have done a couple of shows up at Northlight, and I'm not doing anything right now, but hopefully I'll be in a show again soon, and maybe you'll see my image on the back of a CTA bus.
Coming back again.
That's fine, but I'm...
The last time I saw you, though, you were just turning down parts left and right.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's nice... to be able to say fuck you. I don't have to do stuff. Being able to say no to work is really at my age really very wonderful.
Is there anything, my last question, is there anything that you turned down that later on you thought, thank God I turned that down?
Oh my God.
Just like the most relieved feeling when you realized that you turned that thing down?
Yeah, there was a really horrible role in DC Cab. I think it was the owner of the cab company in DC Cab, and I did turn that down. And then when I saw it, I went, I it was a conflict. I couldn't take the job. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, thank God I dodged that. But as my writing partner and I did turn down a couple of movies that turned out to be, You've Got Mail. We turned that down. And Mrs. Doubtfire. That was a big mistake.
What?
Yeah. Because it was actually, at the time, it was offered to us, it was an Indian.
Like Bollywood type thing?
It was going to be him doing an Indian accent.
Oh, like, God.
And even though I'd done one on Saturday Night Live, I just thought, yeah, it's a little bit...
For a feature movie, 2 hours.
Yeah. A bit much. And then it turned out he did an English accent and was like, oh. Maybe we should have done that, John. It was a big hit. I'm the luckiest man in show business. I have very few misses, and I've had way more than my share of luck. I'm very grateful for
good luck, and I'm sure that you will continue to do many things, and we will absolutely look for it. And hopefully, let us know. Please let us know the next time you're doing anything.
I will. Thank you, Patrick.
We will all be there.
Yeah.
So from everybody at Universe Head Family, I want to thank you again so much for taking almost 4 hours out of your Sunday to come and do this with us. Check out anything you can on Mr. Tim Kazurinsky. Most of his Saturday Night Live stuff is locked up by CNN on their website, so you have to go to it. But you can go rent and buy all of the police academies, because that is how you raise a child. People should raise their children on police academy. So thank you, Mr. Kazurinsky. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrick.
And have a wonderful evening. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Much obliged.